All right, I am reading now from the introduction of Dr. Richard Langer's book. And I should point out, I meant to mention this before, and I forgot, but you are co-author of Winsome Persuasion, correct?
Yes, I wrote it with a good friend of mine, Tim Muehlhoff. We're both professors here at Biola University in La Mirada, California. And it came out of a lot of conversations. We have a class that we co-taught, and so it was definitely a joint project together and a lot of fun to be able to do it with Tim.
And Dr. Langer is a PhD from the University of California, currently, as he mentioned, professor of biblical and theological studies at the famed Talbot School of Theology, as well as director of the Office for the Integration of Faith and Learning, the Integration of Faith and Learning at the great Biola University. And I want to read something that you wrote in your introduction, Dr. Langer. Okay, everyone, now follow with me now. This is not something that is earth-shattering, but it is significant. Check this out. There's only one way to strive for decency, reason, responsibility, sincerity, civility, and tolerance. And that is decently, reasonably, responsibly, sincerely, civilly, and tolerantly. Dr. Langer, that sounds great, at least in theory. Has it ever played out in practice?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And just a quick comment on the quote itself, you know, that came from a guy named Vaclav Havel, who was an Eastern European dissident. He was a Czech, artist, writer, I think he was playwright. And he ended up becoming president of the Czech Republic after the Iron Curtain fell. And he was a guy who dealt with really practical problems, some of the worst problems you could possibly imagine, from, you know, the fall of communism, all the atrocities that happened in the course of that. So he's saying that to people he was arguing with at that time who were wanting to do things the opposite way. And he said, no, this can work. And he actually, the Czech revolt that he led has been called the Velvet Revolution, simply because it wasn't nearly as destructive as so many of the other revolutions that kind of took place. So, you know, he's a great model of that. Another one that we tell the story of in the book is St. Patrick and the country of Ireland. And it's a remarkable thing to think about, you know, Patrick's experience. He was, when we think about Patrick, we think about him as being Irish. He wasn't. He was English. But when he was about 16 years old, he was out at on a beach party with mom and dad and the kids or whatever, and they're out walking along the beach, and they look out, and a whole batch of Irish pirates are landing their boats on the beach, and they're going to rape, pillage, and plunder the city that they're in, and so they did. And his family takes off; they all take off running. He hides, but he gets captured by the Irish. And they take him off to Ireland as a slave. And so he spends about 6 years there, being enslaved to an Irish, pirate warlord. He finally escapes. He kind of has he was sort of a nominal Christian when he was captured, but he had a bit of a conversion experience while being a slave. He fled to modern-day France, got training in a monastery, and then he came back to Britain as a priest. And then when he was about 48 years old, which is really the average life expectancy of a person at that time, he had a vision from God, someone from Ireland saying, come back to us. And so he decided he needed to go to Ireland. Well, the thing about Ireland at that time was its trade really was piracy. That's just what their economy was built on. They fought with each other. Their gods were just evil sorts of, the human sacrifice, the images of their gods show them eating human beings alive. It was a very violent, ugly culture. And Patrick, landed on that island with basically no settled cities, nothing but warring tribal lords. And he had 12 people, and he said, what am I going to do? And here's the really interesting thing he did. You couldn't have found a culture that was more opposed to the gospel. But instead of getting in a big fight with everybody, he decided, let me just show them a different way to live. So he created what we might call now monastic communities. But if we thought about it that way, we'd probably be thinking about it in the wrong way, because we think about a monastic community that, you know, you kind of build a wall to keep the world out, and then you do your thing inside the wall.
Yes, sir.
Well, for Patrick, he built the wall around the community, but it was more like the way you paint a line on a playing field. So like on a football field, you draw the sideline, and you say, look, once you enter into the playing field, the rules of football apply. So you can tackle, you can run, you can do whatever, but it, you know, the lines mark a boundary mark. And for Patrick, the lines around the community that he formed were basically saying, this is a boundary marker for the lines for the kingdom of heaven. And when you cross over this boundary, the kingdom of heaven rules apply. There won't be violence. There won't be rape and pillage and plunder. None of these things will be characteristic of what we do here. We're going to live in a completely different fashion. And so he brought 12 people in, began to live that way, and people were drawn to it because there was so much violence and hatred in the world they lived in. And so they kept at it.
Interesting. And so these people who, this is the only way of life they'd ever known, saw another way of life and were drawn to it, partly because a lot of them really didn't want to be involved in life as they had known it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There was nothing delightful or wonderful about the way they were already living. And so they saw an alternative. They thought, wow, that's an upgrade. The amazing thing was how effective he was. So he found a warlord, took him in. He kind of set up his camp beside him. Some people got interested. Some came to Christ. They ended up planting a church. And then they moved on. And they left two of their people behind to kind of lead the church. But they took two people from the existing, that tribe that they just found, and brought them with them. So they kept their group of 12 people, and they went to the next tribe. And then they went to the next one, they went to the next one. And over about a 20 or 30-year period, he converted about a third of Ireland to Christianity. It was an amazing transformation in a remarkably short time, basically by saying, look, we're going to plant communities that just live differently. And it's a great example of kind of this notion of a counterpublic, where we're saying, look, I don't think what our public is doing, we're going to turn around and live differently. But do it close enough that others can see and be engaged and be drawn to it. So we actually serve as a model that others can look at and say, oh, wow, this is a thing that that I want to be a part of.
And I love that.
So Patrick leads a wonderful example of that.
Ladies and gentlemen, think about that now. This is real world, true event. St. Patrick, awesome job of drawing the culture in instead of driving them away. We're going to hear more about that when we come back. Our guest, yours and mine, is Dr. Richard Langer.